Well, welcome, folks. We are here this evening for another one of the Multiply Vineyard webinars. Tonight, we are talking about bivocational ministry, the keys to sowing, all the struggles, the ups and downs, and the ups, very much so, the rewards of bivocational ministry. We know in the vineyard and all over, that is becoming more and more the norm to do bivocational ministry, especially as you're church planting. And our webinars are really set up to support folks and pastors to multiply their church, as well as to support planters to go out and continue to spread the kingdom. So tonight we're excited you're here, and to those who are watching after, we're really excited for those who get the recording and are going to listen in after the fact. We're going to spend about 60 minutes tonight. Just a couple quick things, tech details. You have a couple buttons in the top left of your screen. Press those, you'll have a chat window, a raise your hand, and a Q&A feature. We really want your interaction. So our focus tonight will be to keep you engaged and to hear your thoughts along the way. We just have four guys up here on the panel, and so we want to make sure there are a bunch of voices being heard, not just the four who you can see our faces. And to do that, we're gonna just kick it off right away. We want to launch a poll, and we want to hear about folks' experiences with bivocational ministry. So what is your experience with bivocational, or maybe as we'll refer to it as bivo, that's probably going to come out along the way. Are you currently in bivocational ministry? We already got five folks who have said yes. Have you previously done bivocational ministry, or are you looking towards bivocational ministry in the future? Please make sure you vote, click in there. We already got most of our folks doing that. As you're voting, I want to introduce who's going to be here with us. So we have three tremendous pastors. And Michael Houle, we're going to start with you, Senior Pastor of the Valley Vineyard Church in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Welcome. How are things in Wisconsin? And maybe tell us a little bit about your story of bivocational ministry.
Sure. Things are cooling down in Wisconsin in September. But things are going well. I've been bivocational for over the last 10 years. And just recently, a week ago, I started full-time ministry.
Awesome. Awesome. So we'll talk more about that, hearing about that that transition and all of your decades worth of experience doing Bible ministry. Awesome. And we have Justin Barney out on the East Coast, pastor at the Praxis Church, who's a vineyard church in Keene, New Hampshire. Justin, how is it in the Northeast? And tell us your story of Bible.
It is turning into fall here on the East Coast already. We are excited about that, or some of us are, myself included. So we are planting Praxis Church in Keene, New Hampshire, kind of the southwest portion of the state, kind of right in the tri-state area between Vermont and Massachusetts and New Hampshire there. So I've been bivocational for the 4 years that we've been up here, and within the last 2 weeks, have come on full time. So very excited.
Great. Thanks, Justin. And Joel Seymour from Lancaster, Ohio, senior pastor there at the Lancaster Vineyard, also involved in the Small Town USA partnership, as are all these guys. Joel, how's it in Ohio today? And tell us a little bit about your bivocational journey.
It's great in Ohio. It is not fall yet here. It is still hot, record-setting hot. So we're still getting some summer here. Even had some schools closed because of heat. But things are going well. My experience has been I've planted two churches, one right out of college. I was bivocational there for about a year and a half in a small town in northwest Ohio. And then when I moved here in Lancaster 18 years ago, planted, and I was bivocational for several years there too. Now I'm also an area leader, so I oversee a part of the country where if we're going to be good at planting, we're going to have to figure out how to do small towns and how to help people do bivocational ministry.
Thanks, Joel. And my name is Justin Jutnan. I'm here in Duluth, Minnesota. I work on the Multiply Vineyard team and help out with our webinars and a lot of whole background training stuff with Multiply and all of our church planters. I want to say hi and welcome to Ryan Myers, Ricardo. We also have, who else was new there? Luke Glover, Mike Smith. Welcome, folks. Super excited to have you. Make sure you open the Q&A window. And I'm just going to end the poll here just to take a look at it. So share the results with everybody. We currently have at least 64% of our folks are currently in bivocational ministry.
Wow.
Awesome. Yeah. Congratulations, yeah. Guys. And hopefully this is encouraging. Hopefully this is something that is a bit of a help and breath of fresh air. And we got a few folks, one person who's done it in the past, and four folks who are looking into it in the future. That's awesome. Joel, as you see that, any reflections? Does that tell you anything if we have most of our folks currently doing bivocational ministry?
I think what it tells me, Justin, is that not only is the Vineyard, but I think at churches in general, no matter what the denomination or franchise, that people are hungry for this, that this is a current reality, I think, in our country and just the state of the economy and just what it takes to have full-time employees now, and even what it takes to plant churches. I just think this is scratching the right itch that many people are finding themselves in this. I know my own son is contemplating a call to ministry at age 16. We've already started talking about bivocational ministry with him. I think it's just the reality that we live in right now.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's kind of dive in right away. I know we've been talking about it a lot. We want to hear, you know, I'm going to hear from Michael actually right away. Michael Houle, let's talk a little bit about what success is, because so often we hear this term bivocational ministry. Sometimes it gets used as a swear word. Sometimes it gets used as a badge of honor. Sometimes that, you know, it sort of gets thrown around in different ways. You've thought a lot about this because you've done it for 10 years, like you said. Tell us a little bit about what success looks like.
Sure. I think that's the key. I think the thing for us in ministry is to define what success looks like. You've been to a lot of conferences in the past, I'm sure, and always bigger is better in the USA, right? The big mega churches in the big urban cities. There's nothing wrong with that. Big churches are great. They do great things. But the reality is for us is in the Bible ministry, you kind of feel sometimes as the ugly stepchild a little bit, to use that phrase, that we end up feeling like maybe we're out of place because we don't have the big successful church. We don't have those things going for us because we're doing ministry in a different way. And I know over 10 years, that looked the same for me, that I really struggled with that concept of what success looks like. And I think we need to redefine that. And I think really to redefine success is what a healthy church looks like. And to steal from what Phil Strout and the Vineyard Movement in general has been doing, I think there's four things that we look at. We look at EDLD. We look at evangelism. That are we reaching out to our community? Are we loving our community for Jesus? Are we reaching out and bringing people in to become followers of Jesus? Then are we raising them up in discipleship? Are we getting them to grow in Jesus? And then are we developing some of those as leaders to become leaders in our church and lead ministries? And then are we is diversity part of it? It might not be diversity ethnically. It could be economically in other ways. But are we doing those things? So that's what success looks like. Are we doing those four things? And are we doing them again and again? And I think that's just the key element to success. And I think once we redefine that in our heads, we'll see some great things happen.
I think that's a really helpful spot to start. We would love, if folks are hearing that, and that is a breath of fresh air to kind of hear some words like that from Michael, maybe just mention that in the chat window. And Justin, you've been thinking a lot about this. You've done bivocational ministry for, you know, about 4 years, you said, before coming on full-time. Tell us a little bit, because we're seeing folks that are just choosing, very much feeling called to bivocational ministry, not feeling how long can I do this till I get out of it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, really, there's predominantly, what I found is two schools of thought, and there are people that are setting out with a call to plant and to do so bivocational until Jesus returns, you know. They are intentional about being in their community in some way, shape, or form while planting with what they would need as a great team to do so. So that's one method that I was kind of shown a few years back, and just kind of, wow, like people really are looking to do this as a lifelong thing, or, you know, however long they're involved in planting or, you know, continuing to plant. So there's that, and then there's the traditional tent making, if you will, kind of finding a job that works in tandem with planting, which is what I did. I knew early on that God was calling me to be able to give most of my time to the church, and so The goal was for me to come on full time, and by God's grace, that happened recently. So there are really are two schools of thought. It's just what is God calling you to, and where, what context are you in that might work itself out? What I'm finding is in the smaller small town USA, maybe corners of the world, bivocational ministry as a career, if you will, as a lifelong kind of ministry call is becoming more the norm. And I've heard a lot of people talking about this is the future. This is the wave of the future in terms of how we think about doing ministry, pastoring town to town, and so on and so forth. So yeah, hopefully that helps.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I think that's continually happening. That's in the conversation, right? Is in small towns, even in urban areas, right? It's not just a small town thing. Have you seen any of that in urban areas too, or heard any about that?
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up. We have. I know of several people. I'm closer to the Boston metro area in terms of big city. We are constantly hearing about. Not even within our own tribe in the Vineyard, but I'm constantly hearing about other people that are looking at doing bivocational ministry and are doing bivocational ministry now, and it's not necessarily a stepping stone, you know, if you will, to greater seat of ministry or a leadership position. So it really is a lifestyle, and people are really looking at that all over.
Yeah, and Ryan Myers, who's in New York, is asking that very same question. So if anybody else is in kind of those urban areas, we want to hear your voice in the chat. Trish is saying, hey, we're in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We have a few folks in there asking that. And please keep asking your questions. We want to, as those questions are coming in, we want to kind of hone in at the beginning about the unique challenges. So what are some of these challenges that... that we've seen generally, and that I think, you know, apply to a lot of folks who are doing ministry in this bivocational way. Michael Houle, well, let's start with you, because I know you have some thoughts on this.
Well, yeah, it's been interesting. Yeah, after doing this for over a decade, you get a real feeling of what it does to you. I think one of the challenges is physical. I think if we're really honest with ourselves, it's the physicality of it. It's fatigue. It's exhaustion. There's only 24 hours in a day. And there's only so much you can do in a day. And if you have a family, a young family like we did when we started, they're now teenagers. But when we started, they were young. And you have to process that through. I think the most depressing thing I saw happened at a regional conference a while back in Green Lake, Wisconsin. It was Midwest. Back when we were just the Midwest, not North and South. And Hap Lehman decided to do this wonderful presentation of all of his church planners when we first entered the ministry. And in our current pictures, well, it was like the opposite of the before and after you want to see in those weight loss commercials. Just you flipped it. Everybody looked a lot more physically worse after like years of ministry and being bivocational than they did before that. And I think one of the realities of that for us is to understand that we need to take care of ourselves. One of the unique challenges I think the Vineyard movement has to transition to in churches in general is if you're going to do this, you have to understand that you are the number one important person to take care of for the health of your family, for the health of your church. And that is key. And so if we don't take care of ourselves, we wear out. So you need to sleep, you know, eating well, exercise. I wish I could say I did those things. I was one of those bad before and after pictures. And learning to do that and learning to take care of that. You know, I think you look at availability of time in ministry as well, you know, as a pastor for your church, understanding that there's going to be challenges in that as well, making sure we take that time. So I think physical fatigue is the number one thing, learning to deal with that. And I really think if you go along and understand that, that'll actually make you more productive in both life and in ministry.
That's really good. What, Joel, as you've experienced that, what kind of about that just like health piece and physical kind of toll that you experience doing bivocational ministry? Oh, Joel, you're muted. Here we go. Gotcha.
Sorry. In our first plant, I was a lot younger. I was 22. That helped. And we started from scratch in a small town. but I ended up working at a factory, ended up working third shift at a factory, and it definitely took a toll. Now, I was able to go full-time with that particular church plant a little quicker simply because I was so young and did not have a lot of bills. It was my wife and I. We were 22, 23, 24, I think, when we went full-time with that church, so it just was a little easier, and we were kind of on a wing and a prayer, quite honestly. I mean, what they were paying us. But it does take a toll, and I think going into it, we have to try to tell ourselves we might be able to push this for a couple of years. I mean, just the nature of the beast, depending on what style of church you're going to plant, that, hey, we got 2-3 years to hit this hard. That's just not sustainable long term. So there has to either be a backup plan of what happens if I'm still Bivo in 2-3 years. How am I going to do this and not wreck my body, wreck my relationships, you know, everything else? So listening to Michael, those are some of the things that come to my mind.
That's great. I think that ties right into the next big challenge that we often see, and that was sort of resounding among everybody, was just limited availability of time specifically for ministry. Joel, I'd love to hear you jump in on that right away. I know we were just hearing from you, but kind of what did that look like? What are the things that you're limited to when there is only 24 hours in the day?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, right off the bat, there's just limited time to strategically plan, to be creative, to think through things long term. I mean, you're pretty much the urgent, you know, I know it's cliche, but it really is true. The urgent takes over the necessary. It's just what has to be done today. And then, oh, crud, Sunday's coming. I got to get ready for that. Or if you're gathering people, you're trying to gather and disciple on the job. But then, as we all know, people are broken and they need pastor, they need shepherd. You're starting with a lot of times just you and your spouse or a couple friends. You're all learning this as you go and trying to help meet those needs. It's definitely a challenge. Now, I think there's ways, we're going to talk about some of those, just to work around that and to incorporate ministry, church planting into your vocation that you're doing.
Yeah, and David Ford, you had just said right there, you did bivocational ministry for 9 years and never felt like you were doing justice to either job, right? And Michael, I know you said that same kind of thing, right? That there's always more that you can give. What are your thoughts there?
Well, and I think, you know, he was right. And you never feel like you're quite giving 100% to either because you're kind of split. And I think that's where grace and mercy comes in this scenario. I my first 3 to 5 years of this were an unmitigated disaster in some respects and just how not to do this stuff. And I was burning both ends of the candle and I was stressed and all the things that come with it. And as I thought about it, I thought, you know, if I don't take care of myself, if I don't take the time for myself and my family, and if I don't minister to my family first, then everything else kind of gets screwed up. And so that was kind of the key thing, was just time. And then give yourself mercy and grace to say things aren't going to be perfect. And we decided to be the imperfect church, not like everything's going to go perfect on a Sunday. And we kind of laugh about it. We kind of make fun of it even in our services. Like, oh, you know, this is who we are and we're real. I think people enjoy that. And I think along the lines, when we gave ourselves permission not to be perfect and splitting that time is when things got better for us, at least emotionally and spiritually healthy. And I think that's the key as bivocational is, you have such a desire in your call to see things go great in your ministry that it gets really hard if no matter what job you're working and how you view your job, because you want to do that well as too, because you want to be a good witness in your job as well. So just to give yourself that mercy and grace in that and to allow for that and say it's okay.
And I would add into that is as you know you're not going to be all things to all people, and part of it's just being ruthless on what are you going to do and what are you going to do to be able to do this thing for a long time. I mean, Early on, you know, Christy and I have always generally had a pretty good marriage. We're both fairly laid back, you know, people, and just for whatever reason that meshed well for us. But man, it put a huge strain on us planting and being bivocational and gone every night, and particularly when I was third shift and I'm sleeping a little bit during the day and getting up and doing church world stuff, and then, you know, going into work at 10 and staying there till 6. I was getting a lot of overtime to try to make things work. So I was working extra hours at the factory, extra hours on Saturdays. But one of the things we instituted pretty early on, and particularly when I went bivocational here in Lancaster and we had a little more freedom at the job that I was on, we just became ruthless about a day off. Just, we are not going to be able to do this long term. And I know not everybody can do that. My particular job here in Lancaster allowed me to have a day that I could just designate. I can't think about church world. I can't think about my other world just because I had a one-year-old at that time, and I needed to be present. And so, well, now what that did is it sewed into our church. Joel's not available on these days. And then it also helped me raise up and train up other leaders to do ministry while I was unavailable, either at work or, you know, at my own day off.
And if I could add to that, Joel, I totally agree with you. I think the big thing is making sure you're ruthless of your kids first. Families first, like I said a few times. But, like, we got to sporting events. You know, we make sure, like, well, my kids are in sports and they're in music, and we go to those activities. And the church, I think, learns something that you're modeling, I think, living for Jesus. You're doing something, I think, what I'd call countercultural in the fact of what you're doing. It. And by the way, I think I'll quote Joel here, as you step away, Jesus controls it anyways. And I think that's a good point, Joel.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's an old, I hesitate to share it a little bit only because I don't think he was bivocational, but when Andy Stanley planted, he had seen what church world had done to staff and I think even his own father. And when he planted his church, he said, you know, I used to always pray when I worked at other churches, God give grace for my family because I'm doing your ministry. And he said, when he went to plant, he said, God, I'm just going to do it. You know, I'm going to plant, but I'm going to have a normal life, you know? And he said, he switched the prayer around. Give grace for the ministry and the church because I'm spending time with my family. And I think there's part of that in bivocational ministry we really have to grab onto that. And we all know as we're hanging out with our family, particularly at sporting events, different things, you can be pastoring too and still making relationships and that kind of thing. But it's putting your family first. Ministry and planting will always be there. There'll always be sinners to save and more work to do for the church.
Justin, what was your experience with that? I know with a young family, you've kind of thought about that same thing. You're talking right now about, hey, it's back to school time. And so life is a little bit more crazy for you and your family and your kids. Kind of tell us a little bit about kind of how you've had to put marriage and relationships and family first. And I'll get your audio there. There you go. I think we can hear you now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some ways, you know, for all of us parents out there, right? Like going back to school is kind of nice in terms of like getting a schedule, getting back to a rhythm of life. And so, you know, I would say a couple things, keeping marriage, keeping the health of your marriage, which then trickles over into your family at the forefront of what you're doing with planting, I think cannot be understated. So one of the things that that Danielle and I did is we sat down and we came up with goals for our family, like just for us and for our family as we ramp up into this crazy school year, you know, and knowing that we're going to be here, there, and everywhere and kind of dividing up our time and everything is scheduled out. But like, what are the main things that we want to hit as a family so that, you know, one of the things that somebody told me and it's never left is like, you can lose the church, but you cannot lose your family. And so that was really helpful, you know, for me to remember. And, you know, quite honestly, I mean, all of us on this panel, I'm sure, have been in a place where, you know, that sometimes you can mistake your church family for your biological family. And sometimes you can think that you're contributing, even if your family's involved in ministry, you can just get sucked up into that. Well, they're coming with me, so they are with me. And you start to realize, you know, as I have definitely, places where in my ministry experience, and even when I was on staff at a church for about 7 years before planting, you can just see along the lines of ministry where you need to course correct, or hopefully you have somebody in your life that's like, hey, you need to slow down, or like, you know, having those accountable relationships where people can say, hey man, are you taking time? I have that in my life right now, even as a newly full-time kind of lead pastor for this church plant. But I have people in my life that I'm just happy to say, can say, hey, how are you? How's your family doing? Like, how are you honing in on your time with your wife? And you know, are you working on your Sabbath day? Are you really taking a Monday Sabbath? Are you really taking a Sabbath? Are you answering emails? Are you know? So having that and having those mechanisms, just having, I think, goals, just intentionality about what you're going to do. So yeah.
And I think that really plays on the strength of the Vineyard movement, which is we're a very relational movement. And so being involved with folks kind of outside of your church are hopefully in some ways your support system as well. Joel, I know you've talked about that is specifically one of the challenges. Being a bivocational pastor, it is much harder to do that. It's much harder to connect with ALs, RLs, other pastors who you know. Tell us about that side. That's kind of one of the other challenges that sometimes gets missed.
Yeah, and frankly, I just admit, as an area leader, I'm not always the best at that myself, as far as thinking that through of, is this a good time for our bivocational guys? You know, the first Wednesday of the month is probably not the best time for them to meet during the morning. And so it's just trying to think through how are other ways we connect with bivocational folks. Do we schedule evenings and then have our full-time folks, you know, bend towards that, or Saturday mornings? It's just very tough. And then if there are regional events or a national conference coming up 2017, you start thinking through, it's not only the money to get there, which their small church plant may not even have the resources to send them, but let's just say they do, it's still that man or that woman leaving their regular job and doing without a paycheck potentially, or blowing their vacation time, which is very precious, because we've been talking about Sabbath. Well, guess how a bivo guy or gal is going to get Sabbath? They're not going to get it weekly a lot of times, unless they're in a special situation like I was. They're going to get it maybe monthly, where they have to take a vacation day just to get a, you know, a mental health break, you know, and spiritually recharge. So I think as Vineyard pastors, whether we're ALs or regional leaders or we're just pastors or leaders in our churches, we need to be looking at our bivo folks a little differently and saying, how can we help? How can we get behind them? Maybe it may be our church is raising some extra money to send them, or to just say, hey, I know you're going to miss a week of work. Here's some extra money to help. You know, those kind of things I think could be very beneficial for our bivocational folks.
Yeah, I think that's great comments, especially coming from an AL. So Joel, even with that role, thank you for kind of spearheading that and being honest about it.
Yeah, and what we're doing right here was intentional, in the sense 2 years ago when the small town partners started talking about when do we do our webinars, we decided we're going to do them every other month. And the other thing we're going to do is, well, if we do one in the morning of a weekday, the next one we're going to run in an evening just for our bivocational guys so they could be a part of it. So even what we're doing here tonight is part of that planning of thinking through how can we better support the bivo men and women out there.
Yeah, thank you. So I asked a question a couple minutes ago in the chat to everybody. What are some of the challenges that you have faced? If you've been in bivocational ministry or you are in it right now, tell us some of those things. We've heard from David taking a day off. We've heard from Derek giving adequate time and attention to all the hats that he has to wear. And then Stephen saying marriage and family have to be balanced and held primary. And then also day off with no ministry, no phone devoted to the marriage and family. So it seems like these themes are running through. If you have any thoughts there, please put them in the chat as well. We want to hear. As you're doing that, we want to send over some resources. So in addition to kind of just hearing some good stuff, we want to give you stuff for after. So I'm sending over something here. This is from the VUSA website, Essential Practices of the Vineyard. This is a lot of Phil Straub talking about EDLD. This is directly to Michael's point earlier of what is success in the vineyard. And so we want to point you there. There's some great resources, written resources, videos, a bunch of good stuff there that really should be kind of front and center for all vineyard churches, church plants, big churches, little churches, rural churches, urban churches, all over. Additionally, we want to throw out, there's been a lot of talk of marriage, family, partnership stuff. The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller. We've had a handful of folks who have used that, who have said, hey, that's a really solid resource. Start there. That's a good spot. Justin, is that one that you kind of resoundingly said, hey, go there. That's a good spot to start. How have you What's a key thing you've gleaned from that one?
The meaning of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
The book. Yeah. I just think that Keller again brings us back to what the intent and design for marriage is. And I think when you realize how important that relationship is to everything that you do, including bivocational ministry, you realize how important it is to get that right if you get everything else wrong.
That's great. And we've had some good comments coming in just about some of those challenges. So, you know, the demand of career outside of ministry and the unknown inflexible job. And a handful of other stuff, especially, you know, David saying to get away, to leave Dodge every few months with my family is a good practice. So let's talk a little bit. Now, we've been talking a lot about the hard stuff. We've been talking about the heavy stuff. Michael Houle, tell us, what are the unique rewards of being bivocational? Please give us a little hope here as we've been laying it on pretty thick of the hard stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been a challenge, but there's been some great rewards. I had to be bivo for more than one reason. One obviously was the financial part of it, you know, just money. I mean, that's a reality. But the second part was, in a small town in particular, to get connected with your community and truly be valuable to them, you have to almost work another job. And the reason that's the case is if I came in and said, I'm planting a church and I'm not invested in the town and you don't know me, it's a problem. In fact, in our town, it's been said it takes 7 years to gain the trust of the town. And we're in year 10, and people after this 10th year, they act like I've been here my whole life. They forget I was even not born here. They think I was born here now is the reality of it. But we had to invest in that. I did it in a unique way. I was a teacher by trade before this. And so instead of being a full-time teacher, which would be hard, my wife is a nurse by trade, so she went to full-time nursing and worked a job, and I went and substitute taught and to give us a little more flexibility to it. But I had to really invest in that. But what became out of that was the community started to bless us. As I got more involved, I got to know all the kids. You know, you go up in the grocery store and a little boy would say, that's my teacher. And the mom would say, no, that's not. And he goes, well, I had him as a substitute. And that became the constant conversation. And so as it became reality for us, is it wasn't what I expected. It, obviously, we'll get into how it blesses we bless our community. But for us, it was a community that blessed our church. And here's how that looked for us. So after investing all these years in substitute teaching and getting to know the town and the town getting to know us, we had our church building burned down last fall. In fact, it'll be a year ago, September 22nd. Will be the first year anniversary of our church fire. In fact, we're rebuilding. If you hear construction noises around us, it's the new building hopefully getting done by our grand opening on September 18th. We're praying for that. But the reality happened is on that day, I got a call at 3 in the morning saying, Michael, come quick. The church is on fire. It's not a typical call you get at 3 a.m. And I headed out the door and ran down. And sure enough, the church building was on fire. It was an electrical issue. It was an old health club we were remodeling, and it burned to the ground. And about 3:30 that day, I was with my friend Luke Garrity and my AL at the time. And I said, Luke, do you want to go on a field trip? And he said, what for? And I said, well, I think we're going to go see the superintendent. He said, okay, of schools. So we drove there, and we knocked on the door, and the superintendent invited us in, and she said, I've been waiting for you, Michael. I heard about your situation this morning. I've talked to the high school, the principal, and everything you need for space for your worship service, for your nursery, for your kids' classrooms are all provided. We're going to give it to you. And I said, well, how much? And she said, no, it's totally free. And then I said, well, for how long? And she said, it's indefinite, until you guys get back on your feet. And I think because of that, we were able to thrive. And we actually thrived through the fire. We've had good things. We've actually grown as a church through that, which is really, I mean, numerically, not just spiritually, but we've actually grown at almost every level. And it's because the community blessed us. God provided us with a community that in turn blessed our church. And that does not happen without me substituting in the building. And so there's some amazing things that happen just from that alone. So we were just blessed. You know how you're blessed to be a blessing? Well, that is kind of what worked for us. So it's been an amazing thing for us.
I think that's such a tremendous story of God's faithfulness. So thanks, Michael, for bringing that up. And congratulations. You guys are now, I mean, you're currently in the building that is now being built, and you've been open in there for what now, 7 weeks?
Actually, no, we're not open.
You're not even open yet.
It's, no, September 18th is our first day. We got like a week and a half. If you hear drills around me, I lost my internet at home, so that's why I'm actually sitting in the building today. So.
The final push.
Right.
Ah, that's so good. So, Joel, I'd love to hear from you. We talked about there the fact that being involved in the community is actually going to bless the church. You've also talked a lot about how you are allowed to bless the community more. You're allowed to make connection with those in your community while working bivocationally. That's a theme we hear from everybody, really, who's doing bivocational ministry. Tell us more about how you saw that play out.
Well, I mean, I think it plays out in lots of ways. One is just right in your own workforce, wherever you're at. You're discipling, you're pastoring. I graduated from Bible college. I went to a Bible college that when you graduated, it was pretty businesslike when you graduated. I actually had friends who got signing bonuses to go to churches, so that was a little different. And it was just very, like I said, just business corporate. It was a little odd at times. And I graduate and I go to plant in a small town and I started a factory. And for whatever reason, I'm not even sure why, I guess the Spirit of God just laid on my heart is this line right here of men and women in this factory. Those are that's my flock. That's who I'm shepherding. I don't have a church. You know, I didn't have a small group, except the core leaders that we had moved there, or some of them already lived there to start it. So it's like, I'm going to pastor these people. And so you begin to bless those people. You begin to bless a factory or the workers that are there and try to model what that looks like. Over time, what that does is you're involved in the community and bivocationally, the word gets out that you're a pastor. I mean, I remember what the job I took down here when I moved here to Lancaster. I mean, everybody was on edge because they knew that a pastor was hired on at their workplace. Like, they were nervous. And yet, what it allowed me to do is just model, like, hey, I'm just a regular guy. I just happen to love Jesus and following him. And, man, they saw me make mistakes and me have to correct them and have to go apologize and ask for forgiveness. And they also saw me, hopefully, model a Christ-like life. Well, what that ends up doing is years later, you'll end up doing the baby dedications for those folks, or being asked to do a wedding, or asked to do funerals, your marriage crises. My boss, I'm 23 years old in a factory, and a lady who's in her late 30s that was at the factory I was working at, you know, asked me to counsel her because her marriage was crashing and she was in an affair and she needed some wisdom. I'm just some, you know, ding-a-ling, college, you know, just graduated, church planner, and yet the Lord came through, and wisdom came out of my mouth. Where I was like, I don't even know where I came from, you know, but it was the Lord. And those kind of opportunities will pop up all the time, you know. I think, too, you'll be seen as contributing to the local workforce. At the first small town I was at, we had a denomination send a church planter to revive a church. They'd shut it down, but they had a building. And he worked full time for about 2 years. He got paid by the denomination to do this. And great guy, but we always scratched our head, like, how are you meeting people? And when we would talk to other small town people that would run into him, they were like, what's he doing? I mean, he doesn't have a church. They're not open on Sundays. There's nobody there. And, you know, it was just odd, you know, to those folks that, you know, that he wasn't one of them. He wasn't in the workforce contributing to the community. And consequently, he was talented, he was a good guy, but it failed as a plant. So just being involved in the community blesses the community, working in the community.
That's really good. And Greg is saying right in the chat right now, he says he totally agrees. I work in a local hospital, and as people found I'm a pastor, they just randomly show up at my door to talk and be pastored to. Very humbly and rewarding. Greg, I think that's such a great example. So, Justin, you've talked about another benefit. One of these unique rewards is that your team is very specifically set up for leadership development. Tell us more of what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, as a bivocational planter, you have to get into the mode of being able to delegate well. And because you realize that, you know, of course, you're going to be carrying a bulk of the load, but man, if you don't have people around you to share that with, you're going to fry out real fast. The other thing that it really does, it builds your team fast. It gets you through the honeymoon phase really quickly so that you can figure out, like, okay, we need to really hone in here. Like, let's let's get the nicey-nicey out of the way, and like let's get down to brass tacks on God's mission together. How are we going to make this work? God is clearly in the business of building his church. How is he going to use us to really help and shepherd it together? And so it does put you in that position of getting intentional really fast, coming up with a plan to develop your leaders so that you can, I mean, for us over here in Keene, one of the things that we have been able to do really well, I think, is really instill the value into our leaders who then pour that out into their small groups and the people that they're leading, this DNA value that we have for multiplication. I mean, you know, crying out loud, it's multiply vineyard. You know, well, multiplication has to be a value for you at that level before you start to see this kind of exponential growth and development. So for us, I know in the bivocational world, I was leaning heavy into the team. In the book, Bivo by Hugh Halter, he will talk about how it is just assumed that that certain individuals on the team, the right people on the right place or the right seat on the bus, handle certain amounts, and that's just equally shared among them as a team, and that's what helps things go. For me, I was and still am at the same time we're doing the both and thing, so it's getting a little easier for me after 4 years now to kind of say, okay, we've raised this person up, we're comfortable to allow them to go, you know, and do this, you know, and they're leading a small group, or they're leading worship, or they're, you know, they're speaking. You know, we have, even in our small church plant, we have three people that rotate for speaking, you know, giving me the break that I need and the time that I need. Right now, as I'm on this webinar, I have the next 2 weeks off from speaking. The other two people on our team that we've worked with and have really kind of group thought and honed in our skills together and kind of where we're going together as a team, are just, you know, we've released them to do that and they're gifted to do it. So you just really need to start leveraging what God has given you and figure out how that you can grow that team together as you're still on the bivocational track.
I love that. I think it's really such a great outworking of everybody gets to play, right? And so you're continually not giving up on, it's not just evangelism, discipleship, and then disciples, it's leaders. It's you're focusing in on those leaders and developing them. I want to send folks a free resource here. It's a little self-serving. It's a little bit of a multiply plug. You sign up for our email list. You get a free copy in English or Spanish that you can download of Launching Leaders. That costs money at Vineyard Resources, but you can get it for free. That is a little, just a great little small book that really sets up what Justin's talking about. What's a process for developing leaders in your church? Hopefully really helpful for folks. Also, we would love to see, so what are some of the rewards that you've been seeing? We have folks kind of commenting in right now. And then as you're commenting, I want to hear, Justin, you mentioned this book, Bivo, by Hugh Halter. Tell us a little bit, what's kind of the key thrust of that one?
Yeah, I mean, Hugh basically advocates, as I was talking about earlier, for the perspective, the paradigm is, you know, that this is the wave of the future. So rather than, you know, trying to kind of, you know, beat a dead horse, if you will, why don't we jump on board with this now, you know, and start to really like multiply this value for having pastors and leaders be connected to the larger community that we kind of have been talking about here. You know, I might not come to the same conclusions because I think it's kind of dependent on context, where you are, what God has called you to do. Some people are being called to be lifelong Bivo, and that's going to work for them. Some people are called to more of a, you know, kind of a missional community style church experience. So it just really depends on what God's calling you to do. For us, we're doing like the kind of the traditional church plant. We parachute dropped into Keene 4 years ago. The only thing going for us was that we were from New England. So as a missionary would learn a dialect and a culture, we had a head start there. So we came back to New England from the greater Philadelphia metro and just kind of jumped in full force. But there's this model of like, you know, there's people that are being equipped and encouraged if they're called to do bivocational ministry for life, you know, for the long haul, and training leaders to also jump on board with that model as well if they're called to that. So resourcing them and equipping them. How are you going to, you know, do this? And then quite honestly, like some people, like even Hugh, I know he's kind of involved in the creative world, and he's, I believe he's a CEO of a company even. And just, you know, he makes no bones about it. Like, you know, if God's gifted you and called you to make money, to be able to make money, then that's a way you can even steward what God's given you to build up and develop the church around you and the community. So very good thoughts, very good ideas.
Thanks so much, Justin. And Ryan had some great comment there. He said, had some great experiences praying for Buddhists and Muslims as students in the ESOL classes that he teaches. Trish talks about how she has more grace for how busy people are, and they're really careful about scheduling meetings and classes. How guilty is just about every church of thinking all of their programs are the most important thing at the expense of folks in their church, right? It's the expense of folks who you want them to be committed, but you also want them to lead healthy, flourishing lives. So good. So we want to transition a little bit. What are the best practices? What are some key nuggets, some practical things that you can take away in our last few minutes here? Joel, I know you continue to hammer this point home of soul care. What's a best practice for soul care?
Well, you know, I mean, optimally, if we're able to have some form of daily takeaway times with the Lord, that would be awesome. But in Bivo, it can be just tough. I mean, flat out, if you're working your rear end off at a regular job and then trying to, you know, do the church, shepherd people, it's just real tough. I remember I was at a retreat for young leaders. I think they had a retreat for like every Vineyard senior pastor who was 35 and under a while back. This had been 10 or 12 years ago when I fit the criteria. And there was just really 25 of us maybe, and Dallas Willard led the retreat. And he said, you know, when it comes to soul care and having time with the Lord, if you can't, you know, take a quick shower every day, you know, at least have a good long bath scheduled, you know, every 3 or 4 or 5 days, you know, and that works in the physical world to some degree, you know, if you can't shower every day, you better have something long planned for a few days later. I think it's the same spiritually, that we have to be tapped in the vine, particularly if we're doing Bivo. I mean, it's just so stressful. So scheduling those times, we may not be able to have what we want every day, but can we at least say, hey, every so often, you know, on Wednesday nights, Thursday nights, whatever it is, Saturday morning, you know, just something in there that we can get a good long drink of water and just spend time with Jesus.
Michael Houle, you were talking about kind of the Jesuit exams, like as an example of this that you've really valued, that's really been helpful in your life. What, tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was reading a book on leadership and on the Jesuits, and one of the things they take away is basically soul care on the go. And basically taking time for the hours of the day, just taking 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 20 minutes there, half hour there. I mean, it's great when you can box in 2 hours, 3 hours, an hour, you know, 45 minutes. But the reality is, a lot of times in your Bible, you don't really even have a gap to sleep sometimes for, you know, 3 to 8 hours. So how do we manage that? And I think one of the things we did is just taking time to build in hours of the day. And so I was flexible enough to give myself grace and mercy that it wasn't going to be always at 7 a.m. because my substituting was a different room every day. But they all have built-in breaks. And I always did lunch with people because that was key. I wanted to interact. But there was always a built-in prep for me or a built-in break. There's 15 minutes here or a half hour. And just taking that time just to spend with the Lord, to slow down. Don't answer business emails. Don't answer any of the church. Don't deal with what's going on for the class. But just taking that half hour, 15 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever the time I was given, and just focus on the Lord. Read some scriptures, do some devotional. And the Jesuits talk about that, the reality of work in their life, of keeping going, that allowed them to take 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And I think that's a very important part, to give yourself permission and grace at those seasons when you have to do that.
That's great. And I just sent over Phil Strout's resource, How Is Your Soul? That's something that, you know, we just keep coming back to, and it's really Phil drawing on the Jesuits as well and saying, hey, let's think about this stuff. They've been doing this for centuries. What can we glean? What are the good stuff that we can glean? And it's like what you said, it fits in multiple spots in the day. How do we think about structuring our time? Justin, when you think about that, when you've had to juggle those things, is there any key things for you that structuring your time personally was helpful?
Yeah, you know, when I was working full-time, I was working in insurance, and actually was working several towns over, so I wasn't even in the town we were planting, but that helped because we were, you know, looking at that town down the road in the future. We have a handful of people that come from that area, and so strategically it was part of the bigger vision mission that God had given us. But I was very intentional. I think I would say similar to Michael and what he shared about on the go. I mean, I was blessed to have an hour lunch break at this job. And so even a half hour or an hour, I think taking some of that time to really be strategic. I can't say that I always took advantage of it for soul care, but I certainly at least half and half. There definitely were times where I needed to focus in on specific things. But then really using that time to read. I remember actually we met in a house, an old house in this town called Brattleboro in Vermont, actually. We were right on the border. And so this lunchroom that I had was in an old house. And I had like a Lazy Boy recliner up there. And like, you know, so I would heat my meals up in the microwave and head upstairs and just, you know, people knew that when I was upstairs, you know, like it was just my time, you know, and I would pray. I would listen to encouraging music. I would, seek after what we're desperately longing for is to be filled up so that we can run the race, you know, and go for the long haul. So those are the things. And then one of the things that specifically has helped me, our family, and subsequently the church has been getting really good about scheduling. I saw some comments about scheduling in our chat. Danielle and I, at this point today, we live by the shared Google Calendar. We are religious about making sure that what we have going on week to week ends up there. And as soon as we know about something, it goes right on the calendar. We're able to look ahead. One of the practices that we have going on right now, which has been super helpful for us, has been every Sunday night, we will sit down before, you know, maybe after the kids go down, we've had a little time, we're hanging out. We will look at the Google Calendar together and we will talk about what's going on in our week this coming week. And that has been super helpful, just honestly, in terms of getting our heads around life, you know, schedules, kids' schedules. And it's just overall been helpful. My wife is a school teacher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm now working full-time from home. She teaches. Our kids are in school, running around. I mean, it just has helped us. So I would say one of the top things that's helped us is it's been sharing our calendar.
I love that. It's so simple, yet at the same time, super practical. Joel, tell us just briefly about kind of, there's a dynamic of the feeling that at the beginning of church planting, especially and maybe doing bivocationally, it's a bit of a season, that you're in the season, you're running really hard. How do you handle that pace and not burn out?
Well, I mean, I think just some of the things that I'm back on there. I think just some of the things that we've talked about, I mean, being ruthless about time for your family, being ruthless for your own soul care, whatever that looks like. For me, it looked like I was running ragged during rental season at a music company that I worked for, where we rented band instruments, and it was work all day fulfilling orders, and then every evening go out to schools all around southeastern Ohio and sell instruments and fit kids, you know, for instruments. I was just running ragged and trying to get a church off the ground and just disciple people, love on people, and counsel people. I became a fan of Wednesday Mass at the local Episcopal church. Had never experienced that. I just hadn't grown up like that. And so, man, it was 18 years ago. That was life for me. It's just putting those kind of things in place. But then I think on top of that, it is having some kind of a coach or accountability person that helps talk to you through that season and really to say, okay, you can do this 2 or 3 years if depending on the style of church you're wanting to plant. If you're just trying to bust it hard, 2 to 3 years, we're going to get something launched. Great. I'm all for it. It takes hard work to do that kind of stuff. But the dirty little secrets of church planters, the dirty little secret of most even men or women who go work for the church full time, it'll be interesting to see how Justin and Michael adjust to this, is that our dirty little secret is we just live at that pace all the time. And it's not sustainable. It's not healthy. It's you know, it's when you start having health issues or mental health issues or relational issues, you know, a lot earlier than you ought to. And so I'm okay with somebody saying, I'm going to bust it for 2 to 3 years. Great, whatever. If you've got these things in place and some rhythm and some places to get a good long drink of spiritual water, great. But you need to be realistic and say, I can't do this longer than that. And so that's age dependent, and, you know, some of it's family dependent, you know, makeup of your spouse, kids, that kind of stuff. But does that make sense, you know, Justin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that seems like what we continually hear. Michael Houle, what, you know, I think that comes back around to right where you started about success, right? Of what that is. And you've talked a little bit about how you heard folks say after 18 months, that's who you are. Maybe tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting. Redefining success is interesting. I know Steve Nicholson quite well, and Steve Nicholson was our, you know, church planting guy guru forever in the Vineyard. And he looked at me and he said, you know, you go hard for 18 months, and after 18 months, whatever it looks like, you are what you are. Meaning basically whatever your church looks like at that point is probably going to be that way. Doesn't mean you're not going to grow. Doesn't mean things. But the reality is you need to change back to a normal rhythm of life, because you can only do this for like 18 months. Really, physically, emotionally. Unfortunately, most of us, as Joel says, goes well beyond 18 months, and that screws things up. But the reality is, you really are who you are. So if you're a church of 30, God bless you. If you're a church of 20, God bless you. If you're a church of 100, God bless you. But the reality is, you are what you are for that first year and a half. Now, you can change things, and you will grow again. I do believe that. God does things, and there's seasons. But allowing yourself that mercy and grace to say, I have to take my foot off the gas and recharge, refuel, and then get into a normal rhythm of life. That was one of the big things. We waited. We waited too long. We did it for 4 years. And that was the biggest thing I think we shouldn't have done. And we realized for 4 years we were what we were, and we changed. And actually out of that is, I think, when things got healthier for us. So just understanding that reality, understanding that you are what you are for that 18 months. And I think it's okay to try. I don't think there's anything wrong with going hard for 18 months to 2 years. There's nothing wrong with that. But then accepting that who you are, and I agree with Joel, then reevaluating what pace and normal rhythm looks like for your family, for your spouse, most importantly, and for yourself. I think that's so important.
And Michael, as we think about that, I know you've been really involved with triads. And I know we can't define that totally. We're going to send folks a resource here. But how is being involved in a triad allowed for your church to then also, even at whatever size, whatever situation you're in, also be a part of something like church planting?
Well, you know, we're a small church. And the reality for us was, how could we be involved in church planting? It was in our DNA. We came out of Ross Nelson's church at Tomahawk, and he's the craziest church planting guy I've ever met in my life. He'd plant another church at age, you know, 60-some right now if he could. But the reality is for us is we looked at a different model. And triads are like this. You picture, you know, a three-pronged approach, three-person approach, three-church approach. So what we did with the Stanley Church and the Tomahawk Church and the Chippewa Falls Church here in Wisconsin, they're all northern Wisconsin churches, we got together and said, well, what we can't do alone, we can do together. Because I may not have the time, but I may have some resources. Or I may have some talent to provide. I may have some people that we can connect together. And we start looking at church planting differently and how we could do it. And with three people involved, we could support one another. And became just more this, not just church planting, but support for one another. Oh my gosh, you got something going on in your church right now. We can provide some worship help. Or you got something going on in a big outreach event. Let's come and support that. Both of those churches may pack my church in the grand opening. I'm a little actually nervous that we might have more people from Stanley and Tomahawk than from Chippewa Falls show up for our grand opening, because they're all excited to support us. That's what starts to happen relationally. And so it really makes a difference. And all we do is commit an hour and a half once a month on a Saturday morning. 9 to 10:30, it's our sacred time, and we focus on church planning and ministering to one another. That's all we do. And it's amazing what's come out of that. So I know I don't want to go too long with it. Read the book. It's got a lot of practical stuff. So I think we've done a triad actually webinar, please just look that stuff up. It is really, honestly, it doesn't matter if you have 20 people in your church, you can plant another church if you use the triad model.
Thanks, Michael. And we are wanting to respect your time. We have just gone about 60 minutes. And so I just want to thank our panel for being awesome, for diving into this stuff. There's been some questions that have come up that we haven't had time to get to. We're going to record a few of those after. So we're gonna close now. We want to respect everybody's time. And we're going to send all this recording out, especially if you got to us a little later. We're going to send this recording out to your email next week. It'll go on the Multiply Vineyard blog. And if you are itching for more webinar stuff, we're meeting with Vineyard Worship folks tomorrow on the webinar, What Makes Vineyard Worship Distinct? So if tonight wasn't enough, tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. Central Time, we're going to be talking with our Vineyard Worship folks about the same thing. Thank you guys so much. Joel, thanks for coming all the way from Ohio. For providing all the thoughts that you have and all of your support with Small Town USA Partnership. Really appreciate you tonight.
Good to be here, and thank you for everybody. A lot of panelists and more than we usually have, and a lot of viewers. So thank you for spending time with us.
Mr. Houle, thanks for coming from Wisconsin, and congrats on everything. We hope the next few weeks before the big church opening goes superbly well, especially with your contractor and all those folks doing the work in the next few weeks.
Thank you. We really, appreciate all the support. It's going to be an adventurous week and a half, to say the least, but that's why we rely on God, right?
Yeah. So folks, pray for the Valley Vineyard in Chippewa Falls. And Justin Barney, thanks for doing everything you're doing at Praxis. And we're so glad that you're on tonight. Would you close us in prayer as well?
Absolutely. God, thank you so much for this unique time and context that you've placed all of us in here, God. And I thank you that you care more about the mission of the lost and the unreached more than we ever could. And I just ask that you would equip and empower every one of us that are here tonight and those who will hear this later that might be resourced or better helped in their particular calling. I pray that you would just remind us that you, if you are first and foremost, if you've given us a call to do this, you will see it through. You will sustain each one of us in the unique ways that you've gifted us and called us. And so we just pray all these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.